people might look at a page and they'll see, or a report, and they'll see a bounce rate of like 95%. And sometimes they'll be like, that's terrible. And you're like, okay, but let's look at the content, you know, because sometimes that specific page was just to tell people about a thing and there wasn't another action for them to take. And then other pages, you need to look at it and it's like, oh, that one, we had a clear CTA on it, or we thought we did, and the bounce rate is that high. That needs to be reworked. But this one with a high bounce rate doesn't need to be reworked.
Welcome to the EdTech Connect podcast, your source for exploring the cutting edge world of educational technology. I'm your host, Jeff Dillon, and I'm excited to bring you insights and inspiration from the brightest minds and innovators shaping the future of education. We'll dive into conversations with leading experts, educators, and solution providers who are transforming the learning landscape. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss an episode. So sit back, relax, and let's dive in. Jill Orman Whitaker is Director of Web Services at Southern Utah University, where she's worked on the institution's online presence for nearly 25 years, serving as a director for the past 15 years. Jill oversees site content, design, and policy compliance, leading a team of staff, students, employees, and more than 100 campus web liaisons, while tracking analytics and accessibility metrics that keep Southern Utah University's web experience both usable and inclusive. A web devotee since coding her first pages in 1995, Jill pairs hands-on skills in HTML, CSS, SEO, and CMS administration with professional certifications in site improve accessibility and search optimization for higher ed. Her practical insights and candid stories make her a favorite speaker at the annual Annan Hill Cascade CMS Conference. Today, she joins us to share how universities can keep their sites accessible, searchable, and future ready. Well, welcome to this show, Jill. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So I want to start with something kind of fun. I like to try to get to know our guests first before we dive into the tech stuff, but noticed in doing a little research here that you coach beginners to finish half marathons.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the distance running and how do you relate that to website management and governance? Can you tie that together?
I can actually. It's funny because basically with both distance running and website governance, you have to think about the short term and the long term goals, and you can't let either of those trip you up along the way. So like when I'll start, like I'm saying, you know, I coached hundreds of beginners to do half marathons, and you start early in the season. And if you have somebody who's too focused on, I have to run 13.1 miles and it gets in their head, I'm sorry, but today you're running three. Mm-hmm. So let's focus on what we're doing today. It's the same thing, you know, with later on in their training though, you know, if there's like, I'm feeling awesome, I'm have 5 miles on the schedule today, but I'm going to go out and try to run eight. But you get overly ambitious and you could hurt yourself, get an injury, and you don't make it to that 13.1. And it's kind of the same with managing a website. You know, you have all sorts of tasks that you need to do right now. I have to do this one right now. Right. And there are the people that are only thinking about this thing needs to happen right this second, just make it happen. And then, you know, as the manager, you have to be thinking, well, wait, what's the long-term plan on this? What's the governance here? How are we going to maintain this? Does it have to stay on the website in perpetuity, or is this a limited lifetime thing? And so you really have to think about the whole holistic view of how this fits into the big term web picture, but also how do we make this thing happen in the right now and do it the best way possible?
Yeah, yeah. I love that analogy. So it makes me think of, you heard the one where like people grossly overestimate what they can get done in like a day, but they very much underestimate what they can get done in a year or more.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you could become an Ironman triathlete in a year. Really, yeah, anyone could, right?
Yeah, you can.
In a year. So I do distance stuff too. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But I want to point out your site. So Jill's from Southern Utah University. And part of the reason I've got to know Jill is through website management and content management systems and things like that. But if you go to Southern Utah University's site, it is obvious it's for students. Like, how did you do that? Like, so you're a small, 10,000 students in Utah?
Yeah.
I guess that's not too small. Mid-sized school, public school.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, look, you have a program finder. It's such a great site. I would recommend everyone check out the site, but you've been doing this for a while. How do you get all the stakeholders on board, and how did that come about? Like, to focus on prospective students?
Yeah. keeping things centralized has been a big help in that regard. I think that if people start to branch off too much, then your site can become fractured and you don't have a consistent messaging. Also, working hand in hand, I'm technically in the IT department, but I work very closely with our marketing department. And we, at first, for many years, tried to make our homepage, this is for everybody. And here's information for the community and for our faculty and for current students. And then after a while, it's like, you know what? Your homepage is not for everybody. It is for everybody in that you have to get all of those audiences into the information that they need, but you don't have to tailor the whole messaging to them. And then if you keep reminding everybody that, you know, if you have some faculty member who's like, well, I would need this announcement about my class on the homepage, and then you're sitting there, okay, but is that really where they're going to go look for it? And I think that everybody kind of gets it now, but it was a little bit of a change when we started eliminating some of those internal announcements from appearing on there. But keeping things centralized has been a big help in that regard.
Well, you've seen it, like you've come further than many schools because it's obvious your homepage is largely for recruitment and retention. Yeah. But back in the day, I remember arguments over like, oh, we'll call them discussions. you know, yeah, the internal content on your homepage, but most schools have at least come that far. Okay, we know we're going to send them to the portal or this internal place, but it's quite a challenge. You coded your first website. We have similar timelines here. Back in 95.
Yeah.
Tell me about that experience that convinced you that the web was where you wanted to build your career.
Well, I don't know if I was convinced that was my career path in that moment, but I was studying communications in college and I was also studying computer science. And the web was coming along and I'm sort of, this is fascinating. You know, you get to do stuff with computers and everything, but you're also sharing a message. And so you're communicating. I'm like, this is the future. This is so cool. And all of my communication professors in college were like, why are you studying computer science? This is a completely disconnected field. And my computer science professors were like, why are you also studying communications? These things have no crossover. And then now here I am, the professors that I'm still in touch with, they're like, did you have a crystal ball to see the future? And I'm saying, no, it was just that they both spoke to me. I was a computer geek and I liked communicating and it felt like a natural convergence.
That makes sense. And I remember because we were kind of coming up on similar timelines and I think of the book Outliers, right? If you're at a certain age, a certain time in your life, things, you're going to just absorb things better, you know, because they're right there in front of you. So that's a similar story. Today, you direct content design and policy for Southern Utah University's entire site. Mm-hmm. What does a typical day look like for you? Or is there no such thing?
There is no typical day. I think that it always surprises even people on our own campus when they hear about everything that I'm doing in a day. Because, you know, 1 hour of the day, I may be looking at, you know, tracking parameters and how we can do an ad campaign through digital ads all the way through conversion and tracking that and making sure that we see that we've spent our money wisely. And then turn around in the next hour and be speaking with the facilities office and being like, okay, how can we mark the all gender bathrooms on campus? And then the next hour I'm talking to the provost's office and being like, okay, so these are, you know, search terms that are being used on our site for academic programs. And this is what's popular and trending and always being searched for. So use that information how you will. And then turn around. It's like, hey, accounting services office, how do we do an internal invoice form? And how do we process that better? I mean, I literally touch every areas of campus.
Right. So tell me, how many content editors or publishers do you have on your campus?
We have over 100 people that have access to our CMS.
Yeah.
Several of them are awesome and they do a great job of keeping up with content and edits. There are some that fancy themselves a little bit more developer than they actually are. And then you have clean up and try to, you know, rein them back in. And then you have the people that just once a year pop in and have to remember how to change a word.
Can't remember the same thing they always ask. Yes. Yeah. So if you have 100 people, I remember at Sac State, I had over 800. Mm-hmm. How do you keep these distributed authors aligned on the standards and the voice? Like, what's your digital governance like there?
So voice is hard. If I see something that I think is really egregious, I actually will kick it over to marketing and be like, you're the voice experts and you made the policies there. You go address that. But standards, we use Site Improve on our site. And so we can make policies. And so we can see if somebody has put something up that, you know, they put an image that's not optimized, or if they're using click here on the website, or they're doing little things like that. Site Improve is constantly crawling our site and we get notifications pretty fast. And then we will contact people when we see those issues coming up. And we're like, hey, we noticed that you put these things in here that way. We got to fix this.
Do you have a formal structure there? Do you have like a committee that meets regularly or?
No, we've had various iterations of a web advisory committee and it has ebbed and flowed throughout the years. But now it's more that everybody on campus has some kind of stake in the website. And so we all try to recognize that. We do have a Google chat group where all of our web liaisons, that's what we call everybody who has access to our CMS, they're involved in there. And then so we can get conversations going. It's like, hey, I forgot how to do this. Can someone help me? And then it's fun because somebody else on campus will like, I remember how to make a link. I'll show you, you know, and they start taking over some of that for me. But it's not a formal governance committee anymore. It's now more marketing and web. We work together to come up with rules and then we push it out to the group and they work collaboratively.
Right. Gotcha. You've kind of been known for a real strong commitment to accessibility. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to know what tactics have moved the needle the fastest on the compliance and the user experience for accessibility.
Well, Site Improve helps with that because it's very easy to say, we have a crawler and we have this report that says that you've done something wrong. You know, you can point at a report that way. But the other flip side of that is, and I don't want to say it's a tactic because it's not just a tactic, but having people on our campus who actually have disabilities and they have needs, you know, and having them test our, you know, what we're putting out there, that helps a lot. And then when we do have somebody on campus who is creating something that is an accessibility violation. And if they push back and say, well, nobody's going to try to use this that has this problem. And then we'll be like, hey, do you know so-and-so on campus? They've given us permission to say, you know, this person uses a screen reader or whatever. And they're like, yeah, I know that person. I'm like, they use a screen reader. Wait, what? You know, they picture the blind user as the person walking around with a white cane. But I'm like, no, they just have really extremely low vision from a degenerative eye disorder. And so they're using a screen reader to navigate the website and it blows people's minds. They're like, wait, really? And it's just, it's the human empathy. And so that's why I didn't want to say it's a tactic because it's just pointing out that that somebody that's sitting in an office adjacent from you, they need this.
I remember, and this is a while back, but a lot of faculty and people who weren't developing pages very often didn't know what accessibility was. They thought it was making sure you had a PDF available for your web page, which is kind of the opposite, you know.
Oh yeah, PDF, the worst way to have accessibility.
It was there's really no understanding or they wouldn't even equate it to digital space. It would be about like doorways and stuff.
Well, and a lot of people don't even think that it's they just think it's blindness and deafness, you know, it's like those two broad ones. Metzner, you realize that mobility impairment can be a problem. How? I'm like, well, they can't maybe not use a mouse. So they're navigating in a different way. So when you say click here, you're basically pointing out that they cannot do that. Or color blindness. I mean, somebody could be the most intelligent top of the campus food chain. They could be colorblind. Nobody knows that. But if you put something on your website that's done in a way, they cannot distinguish it if you haven't done. Yeah. I mean, the spectrum is so broad. And I've heard this saying too, that all of us are temporarily abled because you never know when something can happen.
And there's so many great tools out there. You've listed SiteImprove, which is one, you know, we used it too at Sac State. Yeah. When I was using SiteImprove, it was so amazing and so powerful. And I found that it was almost one of the instigators that helped us launch this web redesign where we did a burn and build, right? We took our 12,000 pages, got rid of them. We didn't even do any copy paste and built it up to like 1,200 pages. And it was a year and a half project. But my question or comment is about SiteImprove that, you know, when you have a tool that can provide you so much information, it was almost overwhelming to say like, we have so many stale pages. We have so many accessibility errors. Like, yeah, let's tackle the biggest ones first. But how many pages do you have? Do you find any of that to be true at SUU?
We are probably approaching that 12,000 mark. We do have a cap on our SiteImprove of 10,000 scans. And so we have cut off some of our oldest press release folders and stuff like that. So they're not even being scanned anymore, which kind of scares me, hurts me a little bit, you know, but we've got a lot out there and SiteImprove can do reports regularly. So at least having automated reports every month going to our web liaisons that tells them you've got these errors. And so then they're scared. It's like, oh, I got this big frowny face in an email saying that X many errors in my site. Like, what should I do about that? It's funny how much a smiley face or a frowny face can impact you still, even as an adult. But that helps them feel like, well, I want to get a smiley face. So what can I do to make this better? And so then sometimes our web liaisons educate themselves, or they reach out to get that education and try to prevent those from happening in the future.
You're also known for offering the Hand and Heel community tips on Cascade. Like, you present at conferences. I feel like you're really good at squeezing the juice out of whatever product you have. What feature still flies under the radar, but still saves you hours?
Okay, this sounds really silly, but when there is a title field with every image that you upload into Cascade, and so many of our content contributors just skip over that field. They upload an image and then they walk away. And I'm saying, if you go and type in a description of what that image is right there, right when you upload it, that makes your alt text every time you try to incorporate that image into your page for you. Also, it gives you some searchable words so that when you're trying to remember what that image was or where you uploaded it into the site, you can search in Cascade. Cascade's got a really robust backend search. And so if you have things tagged and labeled appropriately, then you can usually find it pretty fast.
Yeah. We use Cascade too at Sac State. There's a lot of great systems out there. I do like Hand and Heel's Cascade. And what I'm seeing, and I know Hand and Heel's doing this as well, is using AI to help. I thought the first thing would, when I first saw AI like a few years ago, the ChatGPT launch, I'm like, wow, now can we actually populate metadata and titles? Because it's already there on the page. Yes. Just do it for the people. So I know they have that now.
Yeah.
Are you using any AI features in your content management right now?
Not really. We are self-hosted on-prem Cascade, and the AI generated, you know, it helps that way. It's all of the cloud, and we haven't gotten there yet.
Gotcha.
Our, you know, administration's like, but why do you need all that extra money? You're running fine. And so that it's not turned on yet, but that's the future.
We'll send this podcast to the administration. Tell them right now. Hey, you guys got to get the cloud version, okay?
It's worth. Jeff said so.
So SEO and analytics are also part of your toolkit. How do you translate bounce rates and search terms into decisions? I think you talked a little bit about this.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah. So search terms are, you know, fun because if you go and look and see, we've got a homegrown program finder that we've built. And so we can go and show, you know what, nursing is always the top search thing. So do we need to be spending money on ad campaigns for nursing? Because people are coming here already, that's in demand, you know? So maybe what we need to do is be working on building out more robust content for organic, or we need to be, you know, building out in-house so that we can have more students involved in the program. And you share that information with stakeholders. Explaining analytics is funny too, because you mentioned bounce rate. People might look at a page and they'll see, or a report, and they'll see a bounce rate of like 95%. And sometimes they'll be like, that's terrible. And you're like, okay, but let's look at the content, right? You know, because sometimes that specific page was just to tell people about a thing and there wasn't another action for them to take. And then other pages, you need to look at it and it's like, oh, that one, we had a clear CTA on it, or we thought we did, and the bounce rate is that high. That needs to be reworked. But this one with a high bounce rate doesn't need to be reworked, because the whole point of that page was to say, there's this thing that's happening on campus and you must be there physically. That's you need to know about it.
I feel like we need new metrics, because bounce rate doesn't mean a lot in itself, just like you said. But what if you combined it with time on page?
Yeah.
Right. That's a good metric. If you're only on there 1 second, that's probably not good.
Yeah, exactly.
10 seconds may be fine.
But if they bounced, you know, 95% bounce rate, but they spent 2 minutes on that page, it's like, oh, they were absorbing the information on that page.
Right. Combine it. Let's create some new metrics.
Yeah.
I think we're getting close to that. I want to talk a little bit more about AI. Are you using any features? Are you excited about anything that you've seen out there, what other schools are doing? Or do you have any plans to use AI in your role as a web director there?
Clearly, I'm excited about the possibilities. There's so much cool stuff out there. And it's really fun to, sometimes when you've been stumped on something that is not working, and you can just feed your code into AI and be like, what am I missing? And they're like, oh, we found that missing semicolon. You know, the things that you spend forever beating your head against the wall before all of this, that's awesome. But there's also a side of it that is a little bit scary to think about, you know, a whole future of zero-click searches, you know, where people, all of the information is being scraped from your site and then output into a search engine. And it's like, here, this is what we've assumed is right from this website. And when you've got a whole bunch of content contributors that forget to unpublish things when they are expired and old and no longer part of the university's actual story. Who knows what that AI out there might be pulling together and cobbling together and being like, well, we found 14 different references about this on the page and all of them are contradictory. So we've just mashed them up into some kind of answer. Yeah. Good luck. So there's a little bit of what does that mean for the future of my role and for the future of websites? I mean, is it all going to be whittled down to generative output?
Yeah, that's the front end to look at. And then I've seen so many different ways schools are using this. But if you look out in the world, there's not a lot of institutions that are using Gen AI in their search yet. Yeah. And I've seen a couple that are trying and it's really hard. It's not mm-hmm. easy to do. And I think one of the keys that I've seen, because I spend my last few years in content discovery and search, is that a human still needs to be in the loop at this point.
Yes. Yeah.
Because, you know, you often do want these dots connected, like, oh yeah, I had figured out that dorms means residence halls, but all those synonyms don't always connect and you want the ability to connect. We're seeing this from the other schools I talked to who are using advanced search solutions as well.
Yep.
And one thing I want to let you know, I'm doing this research and I'm looking at search terms that universities are, that if you go to a campus homepage, the actual search bar, whether mm-hmm. it's Google or another product, you look at nursing, you said nursing's your top one. So the generic terms, like nursing's kind of generic, although it's a program, are getting the pretty low click-through rates mm-hmm. compared to if you search for an actual course or more specific, even more long tail, like AI type searches. It's drastically different. I don't have the data yet. I just only talked to a dozen schools, but it's kind of crazy how it's shaking up the search landscape too.
Yeah, that's one of those things that kind of is two distinct users. You know, you've got the ones that know precisely what they want. And so they've got the whole long tail query. And then you've got the younger set, you know, prospective student set. There's like, I don't know, maybe a nurse. You know, and so they don't know all of the specifics. But then if you have somebody who's worked in an industry for a while and they're like, oh, I've already been a registered nurse for a while, but I would love to know how I can move into FNP, family nurse practitioner, or how I can move into an MSN, you know, in different levels that way. I doubt a high school student is ever going to think, yeah, FNP, how do I get that? But when you've had somebody that's been in industry, and that's where audiences in higher ed are changing so much too. You've got more and more non-traditional routes that we need to think about and consider. There's all of the different changing audiences and changing goals of the base student. It's not the same core student that we've had forever.
Right. I feel like every week and month it's changing.
It is.
So if you could give every new web content publisher one gadget or book or a mindset on their first day, what would that be and why?
I always go back to the book Don't Make Me Think by Steve Krug. It's just, it's a classic. It's been published for a long time. You probably, somewhere right back there. I have mine over there in a bookshelf. But it's a classic because I think that sometimes people try to be too cutesy and they overthink how they want to talk about something. And so instead of making your links, you know, it's like, you know, be part of the family. And it's like, wait, what does that mean? What is that? And it's like, it's just jobs. That's really what we're advertising. It's jobs. And it's like, oh, you know, I mean, it's straightforward, especially now. I feel like it's even more relevant because that book was published first, like 20 years plus years ago.
Yeah.
I feel like it's even more relevant because we have even more information data points coming at us with social media and, you know, search engines and AI and everything coming at us so fast. And everybody is absorbing this information with such fractured attention these days that I feel like even more, Don't Make Me Think.
Yeah, I love that one. We'll put a link to that in the show notes. So let's fast forward. Oh, let's say just 3 years. What does a well-run university web team look like? And what skills does that team have to have?
AI is going to be on there in 3 years. I mean, that's obviously going to be part of it. I think a big part of it is even more so having that communication and that human voice aspect of it. Because you can't have the stereotypical coder that sits in the dark office and cranks out some code, and then the marketing person that's over here making bold promises, and they are two separate things. I think that there has to be a lot more overlap. You've got to have the marketers that understand the code base and what's going on underneath, and you've got to have the coders that are developing things that understand click-through rates and calls to action and things of that nature.
That's a great point. You know, you make me think of an article I've outlined I'm writing here is, it used to be there was the IT team and the marketing team. They would try to work mm-hmm. together, and often it was challenging at best. And sometimes you have a great relationship, but often it's just, you know, IT would roll out software and say, go to training. We have the software. Now we know it's different. We know marketing yeah. is saying, we need this. We need to work together. IT can't keep up with what's available out there. Yeah. So we know that that's happening. But I want to take it a step further and say, like, I've seen the most successful institutions recently be the ones that have a leadership role. Usually it's a web director like you mm-hmm. that's in the marketing team.
Yeah.
And so that person has almost like, I wouldn't say autonomy, but they see the whole picture. Mm-hmm. They can select, they can provide recommendation, they can do the implementation and then, you know, manage that solution. Yeah. And I feel like it's not like, let's get IT and marketing to work together, but what if we kind of almost merge them in a way and have that, like mm-hmm. have a leader that has some sort of, it's not even, I wouldn't even call them IT skills because it's such a different world now. Like yeah. you almost don't need IT skills, but you need that some experience in like the newer technologies and how you go about that. Like, so we'll see.
It's a convergence. I mean, there's a whole IT literacy that everybody is going to have. And I see it even in my daughter's curriculum in school. I mean, they teach a lot more coding and IT literacy in middle school level, you know, and I feel like people are going to come up and they're going to have a lot more understanding of technology underlying things.
You know, one question, I want to ask you one more because I forgot to ask this earlier, but I feel like you might be pretty centralized SSU. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but the bigger schools often have multiple CMSs yeah. and, you know, R1s, they're just in a different boat. But do you wrestle with rogue microsites at all? And how do you deal with that?
We do. I mean, there's always that chance. You have stuff like Wix and GoDaddy commercials out there telling any monkey can build a website. And you're like, that's true, but they're not doing it right necessarily. And then people have a purchasing card and they can just go out and like, well, I just bought a domain. I just bought, you know, a Wix account and stuff. And so we have had a lot of rogue microsites that pop up over the years. And then when we find them either due to the person who registered the domain and made that site then has moved on to new roles. And then there's just this thing floating out there. And the new person's like, how do I get this? And I'm like,
a department's locked out of their own site.
Yeah, yeah mm-hmm. essentially. Yeah. So then we have to go through recovery processes and migrating it back into the fold. One thing that has really helped is being in touch with our procurement purchasing office. And they have now set rules on P cards on campus. And so if people are trying to make purchases on things that are registered as web hosts and domain registrations and stuff, it blocks their purchase until they get approval. And then that's the purchasing great. Office is like, hey, IT, Jill, you know, do you guys approve this? And we're like, no, we do
we
not.
We need to have a meeting.
Yeah. So that's actually been a huge improvement. And that's something that has only come about the past couple of years.
Yeah. Well, that's great advice. And is there any advice you give to like new web directors coming into the field right now?
Oh, I think giving up some control and giving trust to your team, that's huge. I think that that's something that you need to do is you need to surround yourself with people that you trust and you need to give them that trust and not stress yourself and wear yourself out too much because you're still one person. You can't do it all. And I wrestle with that every single day. I feel like I've somehow made it a detriment to my department in some ways because for many years, I'm like, I can just keep working at home and all night long and do all these things. And then I had a child and then I'm sitting there, I can't work all night anymore. And then, but I did all this stuff of like two full work days in a work day. And now I don't have that time anymore. And I'm sitting there, if I had just actually distributed work and then also stepped up and said, hey, there's too much work coming in right now, then maybe my team would have grown more than it has right now.
Good advice, Jill. Well, it was great to have you on the show. We'll put links to your site and your LinkedIn in the show notes. And
perfect.
Thanks for being on.
No problem. It's good chatting with you, Jeff. Bye.
We wrap up this episode. Remember, EdTech Connect is your trusted companion on your journey to enhance education through technology. Whether you're looking to spark student engagement, refine EdTech implementation strategies, or stay ahead of the curve in the emerging technologies, EdTech Connect brings you the insights you need. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an inspiring and informative episode. And while you're there, please leave us a review. Your feedback fuels us to keep bringing you valuable content. For even more resources and connections, head over to edtechconnect.com, your hub for edtech reviews, trends, and solutions. Until next time, thanks for tuning in.